A lot of creatives out here don't know how to interpret their creativity to the world. Very important to plug yourself into spaces that have similar creatives like you. Everyone is trying to monetize everything. How is the industry evolving? And when you look at how the industry is evolving, have the knowledge to distinguish what are trends, because trends don't stay on for too long, and what's a pivotal direction that's steering the change for the entire industry. Yeah. There's this notion that creatives are difficult to work with. Are they difficult to work with, or you do not just understand how they work, or don't have structures and systems in places that streamline that kind of efficiency? For you to be an effective creative manager, or in any field rather, you must have worked in that field before in other capacities, because it gives you an understanding of what the process is like.
AfroMillennial, the podcast, is a casual sound space for millennial creatives in Uganda and across the African continent to share their life stories. The podcast discusses a healthy balance of their professions, passions, and personal lives, and offers a bit of perspective and lessons from their life experiences. Come on, let's have fun.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to AfroMillennial, the podcast, the second season. The podcast, which is basically a sound space where we talk about everything creative. We host WizKids, like the one that is in the studio today, and just get to know them better, get to know, you know, what keeps them driving, what informed their decisions, what big lessons they've drawn from their creative journey, you know, and what they do when they're not being creative, which is almost never. But yeah. So with me in the house today on a chilly morning in Nairobi, Kenya, is a man that wears so many hats, but he'll be telling you more about that. I don't want to, you know, step over the edge, or I don't want to be telling you hats that he has since moved on from, sort of passed down to somebody else. Mm-hmm. In the house, we have Nigel Edwin Meetings Courier. I call them meetings because the man has a knack for meetings. This man has an average of like 5 meetings a day.
I don't have a knack for meetings. Maybe I should correct that.
You like to take meetings.
I don't like to take meetings. I find myself roped in a lot of meetings.
So, Nigel Edwin Courier.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I feel like I should start with like, whoop, 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 whoop,
whoop, whoop, whoop, whoop, whoop, whoop, whoop, whoop,
whoop, whoop. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you doing?
Very well.
Part Ugandan by association, no?
Yes, but like, I feel like my spirit of partying and everything is Ugandan.
Yeah, true. For the Ugandan audience, for those of you that have seen any media that came from the most recent Nyege Nyege Festival, chances are you probably saw Edwin's face somewhere, because the media was all over him. What was that about? Did you like pay them or something?
No, I didn't pay them, but I feel like
you are a vibe.
Was just authentically having fun, because that's what we went to do. So every photographer or creative is always looking for sights and moments. And so, yeah, we ended up, some of them were shocked to me. I would get tagged or sent photos. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah, probably
only posed for two. And then the rest didn't know they were there.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah. Before we get more into Nigel's story, do you prefer Nigel or Edwin? I've always been curious to ask.
Either is fine. Or I prefer Ed. Nigel. I think Nigel is...
Nigel.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's more bougie, huh? Before we get more into Nigel's story, I'll just cue in the comments that we might have had or feedback from the most recent episode of the podcast at this point.
Hi, my name is Juliet. These are my thoughts on the latest episode that featured Consolate. She talked about how in Kafunda Creative, she talked about tooling, the people that you work with. And I've been toying with the idea of doing the same with my own business, because in the past, we'd only just do a Zoom training and that was it. And we've been contemplating having peer-to-peer trainings as well. But then like the cost, I was like, we're beginning to rethink it. When she shared, like, I really saw the value. So definitely it's something that I'm also going to have to like incorporate. And I thank her for actually sharing. I got to see like, this is actually very good for the teams to equip them. And the other thing, when she shared how, like, at the end of the year, when Kafunda Creative people come and then they get to learn from, like, gurus for free, and I was thinking, oh, that is actually so nice. Like, you're new to the industry and there's so many questions, or maybe you've been in the industry and then you're struggling probably in an area and you're thinking, am I the only one that gets to undergo this? And then coming in for this session where, like, you get to learn that, oh, this is actually something that other people go through and how to navigate it. And I was thinking, oh, this is a very, very, very nice idea. And the other thing that I made realization of, like, the creatives, people that provide services as a product, struggle with pricing. And it's just not the pricing, but building credibility as well, because people in the same industry are doing manyanga, clients are a bit skeptical, and then there's consequences on payment, like she said. Documentation of agreements is also, like, unheard of. Very, very, very grateful that I got to listen in.
There were so many cool stuff that Consolate did share, and I was like, wow. I felt super amazed by what other people are doing in their space, especially trying to share stories of what creatives are doing. I always feel that creatives need a strong community, because many times creatives are sort of outliers of sorts. People don't understand them. They keep wondering, why are you even doing what you're doing? To lots of people, it just doesn't add up. So that's why a community is super strong. And what Console with Kafunda is doing, but also the different work she's doing in terms of telling these stories, the documentary they mentioned, I can't wait to see what it is, but I am believing it's also just kind of pushing the narrative forward of the power within the creative economy in actually transformation. I always get a bit shocked that people don't see the power of the creative economy in terms of us being authentic with ourselves, telling our stories, also shedding light on what people are doing there, and basically how that can transform how Africans view themselves and how other outsiders view us. This was super, super nice. It was well, well cooked.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Offre Millennial, the podcast.
Thanks, everybody. We appreciate it when we hear back from you on these episodes and, you know, the issues that are discussed. I think it goes to tell us that, you know, what we bring onto the podcast means something to someone out there. And that is literally why we do this. Nigel, you have won like a billion hearts in the creative space.
Yes.
What would you, if they asked you to define yourself like as Nigel in the creative space, mm-hmm. what would be that one sentence that would define what you do? Or what you've done?
One sentence would probably be someone who interprets creativity to the world. I've been on the space of where you're actually creating, uh-huh. and also been privileged to now transition to the place where you start to represent or work on behalf of creatives or manage creatives or run creatives. And I realized a lot of creatives out here don't know how to interpret their creativity to the world. Like, they have really good stuff, but unfortunately not everyone, because creativity is very subjective. So not everyone is able to understand what your realm of creativity is until you understand how best to share it and communicate to the world.
So on the creative side of what you do, like mm-hmm. on the creating side of what you do.
Yes.
You've modeled, right?
That was a very small stint and it was commercial, but it wasn't great. Professional. Right.
Like, that's just like one chip off the whole list. So you've modeled.
Yes.
You do voiceover.
Oh, yes.
You do voiceovers, right?
Voiceovers. You're a voiceover artist. I absolutely love voiceovers.
You're a digital marketer.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You've done a bit of influencing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 yes.
You dance.
I don't know if you can lose the sense of dance, because uh-huh. I used to be part of a dance group in high school.
Yeah.
And I think I was featured in one of those high school magazines.
Yeah.
The time was Insider.
Super.
I barely can make any sensible movements. I mean, I have a little bit of rhythm, but I don't think I make any sensible choreo movements.
And you're also the creator or organizer of parties. So my question is, you know, all these things, how have you learned to translate them or interpret them to the world, like you said? Mm-hmm. Like, what has that taken for you to come from just the creative to making the world understand them how you see them?
It's taken a lot of observation mm-hmm. and learning from people's mistakes, people's successes. One of the things that happens is, especially that's happening as a culture right now,
yeah,
everyone is trying to monetize everything. And, you know, you're just like, what happened to just having fun, just having a good time, just doing what you need to do? You don't need to be strategic 100%. I mean, just figure out sometimes some of these things, and we'll talk about them. I've stumbled into them. Like, you wouldn't believe, yes, I'm a voiceover artist and I do a lot of voiceovers right now, but you wouldn't believe that I stumbled into voiceover artistry. Like, I just ran across someone who'd been doing it for a while. They're like, mm-hmm. Have you ever tried voiceovers? You have a great voice that would do that. And I was just like, no, I don't even know what I didn't even know what voiceovers were at the time.
Yeah.
Like, he literally had to explain to me in the most basic of forms. You know, when you listen to an ad or when you watch an ad or a documentary and there's a voice underneath, that's what a voice.
That's a voiceover.
Having seen that, and also I got into management very early. Got my first manager's job at the age of 23. And so there was a lot of training or mentoring that was going on. And so I got to learn and see tidbits of, and it was in the creative industry. So I got to see, and at that time it was artists with their music videos. It was commercials. So you're working with a lot of models for the same. It was runway shows. So you get to see where the cracks or the gaps are. Mm-hmm. And because I had a journalism background and had worked in that space for a little bit, and my second major was in advertising, then I started reconciling a few of these bits with some of the lessons I was seeing. And I could see where the challenge was. You'd find a struggling painting artist who's telling, it was really good work, and they're telling you, no one is buying my art. But you dig deeper and ask them, okay, so how do you share your work with the world? How do people know what it means to you, or what it represents, or what it's supposed to be about? And that's where the disconnect would come in. You'd realize this person knows only how to create the art, and it stops at that. And you can't fault them, because sometimes, I mean, we all lack in certain skills or elements, especially if we're not being deliberate about getting them. And so I would say that's how I got on to learn, what do I do? Of course, you're researching and seeing what's happening in other parts of the world. You're also talking to people who've been in this industry before to understand what have been the foundational elements, so that you understand what works, what can be carried on, what needs to be shelved now, and like, okay, this is not working anymore. And then now that gives you a space or an authority for you to introduce what could be, at the time, your crazy ideas.
Beautiful. You mentioned, you know, you were a creative first, and then you went into management, and then, you know, some of the bits that you picked up on were, you know, more around knowing who to speak to, who to, and things of a sort. Would you say these are like key tips that any creative has to know to be able to move from just being a creative to being able to properly sell their product? Besides just talking to people, are there any other tips that you think stood out for you along the way?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think my first creative pursuit was always writing. Hard to believe it now when you think about it, but I've always, innately, I've always been an introvert. So that has always been my thing. Innately.
Yeah, very hard to believe.
The extroverted qualities, I think, have grown on me
moving
forward as it required. So I used to get lost a lot.
I can actually relate now that you...
Because you realize I do a deep in and out most of the time. So especially even in events, or it has to be in a group of people I'm comfortable with. So I used to lose myself in a lot of books, in a lot of those fictional worlds, comics, everything. And after that, the next logical step is you try to write. I remember in my second year of high school, I had already started working on a fictional book manuscript, which, well, didn't go far. I mean, I did send it to a few publishers, but it didn't go far. But, I mean, I did explore the whole writing bit for quite a long time. That was my first creative exploit. And the reason I'm bringing this is because I learned, getting into campus, I learned that it's very important to plug yourself into spaces that have similar creatives like you. So at the time when I was writing, I remember there were forums that would happen in Nairobi CBD at, you know, at the German Institute for that had all writers, amateurs, sub-editors, journalists, editors. Remember, at this time, I'm still very early on campus, but of course, I'm pursuing journalism. But in plugging yourself in these spaces, you start to understand, oh, okay, this is how you localize or find your voice. Okay, so this doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all for everyone. This is how perhaps I need to think of my audience after packaging my work. So all I say is always find those spaces that matter to you. As a voiceover artist, I mean, I've told you I stumbled into it. Then later on, I started I started going to workshops where there are other voice actors in this country. I started relating and networking in events where I'd find other voiceover artists, because then you start to understand, when you get into it, you may be thinking, oh my God, I want to do everything. But when you start meeting people who do what you do, you start to realize, oh, I can specialize even in voiceover. I can decide this is the path I want to go into. I can understand what the template or the footprint of commercializing this looks like. How do I package myself? For instance, you want to do voiceovers for a corporate. It's not enough just to tell them, hey, I do voiceovers, I'm doing this. You probably have to build a portfolio. How do I build that? How do I build a portfolio that's specific to a certain industry? So one is plug yourself into spaces where there are those creatives. Number two, also don't stop learning. You could probably have a voice that you think is the best for voiceover, for instance, or you could be one of the best photographers because it comes to you easy. But because you're not putting in the work to learn more, people will come into the industry and you become redundant very fast. Number three, be very aware of how is the industry evolving? What are the emergent things? And when you look at how the industry is evolving, have the knowledge to distinguish what are trends, because trends don't stay on for too long, and what's a pivotal direction that's tearing the change for the entire industry.
You mentioned something interesting about, you know, being introverted before and the extrovert life sort of just growing on you. You know, ironically enough, it's something that I find like a lot of creatives deal with. You know, like, you know, probably because they feel, you know, a little misunderstood by, you know, the general one-inchy and stuff like that. And that also could probably, you know, feed into why they, you know, there's like these creative spaces, like you said, where they meet up and, you know, share common thoughts, share common minds and build their talents all together. But how do you think we move them from there to an extroverted level where they are able to sail outside those spaces? I mean, over time, I've realized that, or I've learned at least from the Ugandan creative space, that usually the market for your creative work is within creatives.
Like fast. Actually, fast is within your friends and family. The next is amongst your fellow creatives.
Then the creative circle.
Yes.
Like, how do we move them to a place where they become socially?
I think it's not particularly getting them extroverted. It's learning. It's for them to learn what I call essential skills. Personally, yes, I am starting to embrace and love the extroverted skills that have come in. But whenever I need to recharge, become a recluse and go back to my nature. But when I talk about essential skills here, it's first of all, communication. How are you communicating what you stand for? Because it's not enough to say, hey, I have made this song. People buy into a story. What's the song about? What drove you to write that song? What are you hoping it does? Is it just a song for us to dance? Even that is okay. But it then has to be authentic to yourself and learn how to do. So how do you do that? You start to set for yourself small milestones that help you get out of your comfort zone. Fine. You always want to be alone. But start thinking, okay, fine, I can do 2 events in a month, just where I can meet other creatives, meet other people who could be potential market. Number two, sometimes it may look a bit too forward, but learn to lead with what you do in your introduction. Hey, I'm Edwin Courier, and I'm a journalist. Hey, I'm Edwin Courier, and I'm an advertising creative. Hey, I'm Edwin Courier, I'm a voiceover artist. You don't want to run on the assumption that people know. And because sometimes the people who know might just be the people in your creative circle and they cannot support you forever. I mean, don't be shy to say what it is that you do. And then eventually start to get rid of the idea of what did they think of me when I told them, my God, I paint or an artist. Do they think I'm poor now? Do they think I don't make money? Do they think I probably don't do anything serious? Because that's how creatives have been viewed for a very long time.
It's more like recently. Unemployment.
It looks
I'm a creative, so you're unemployed.
So you don't have a job. So, I mean, that's the thing. That's number one. You have to set for yourself sizable milestones. Because I feel where people go wrong is they feel, I can see where Anthony Mwami is today. Right. He looks very confident. He's doing very big things. So I just want to achieve this and be there tomorrow. You ignore and don't see the process of first what he's done to work on himself, what he's done to work on his brand. And I'm not saying we all have to go through the same. If you, it took you 5 years, it doesn't mean it needs to take me 5 years. But there's a process, however long or short it is. There's a process. So it's also in understanding and documenting your small wins as well. It's like, oh my God, today I went to an event and I managed to network with one person. that is a win for me.
Right.
I'm not going to compare and be like, oh, Anthony was the life of the party. He had a whole team and group around him. Like, I managed to network with that one person.
Yeah.
So how do I keep this network going, and how is it of value to the both of us?
You started out,
mm-hmm.
you know, quite young as a manager in, you know, the creative space. You know, you have since gone ahead to like start a whole firm of your own, which, you know, you'll tell us a bit about. What was it like for you starting out in the industry? You know, did you gain respect like instantly? Was that hard for you?
Oh,
did you
my have goodness, to,
you know, like, go through like fire hoops and stuff before, you know, people got to respect you?
In fact, I have to say that I also stumbled into management. I'll explain that story. It's a story
this guy stumbles into everything.
It's a story of being daring and bold, and being bold born out of frustration. When I started out, I remember I had been a news video editor. I had been a show editor. There's a news show that I'd do every day, like as a video editor. And you wouldn't believe how I don't like video editing these days. I mean, I can do it. I just don't like it. I sort of like got bumped up or leveled up a little bit and moved into the tech space as a digital content producer. And it's not easy because... everyone pegs on you, and working in the tech industry, you're working with a lot of people who are, I mean, by and large, technically smarter than you on a lot of these tech issues, mm-hmm. but they require you to translate what they're doing through content, creating that. And so that was very difficult for me. I mean, I think I had more losses than wins during that time, and it was starting to weigh on me and become a bit more frustrating.
Yeah.
And so I was looking for an outlet of, I need to jump ship and go back into actually creating, either being on camera or being doing this. So at that time, I remember seeing a production house, which was putting out a call for different interview positions. The problem was, the only interview positions they had put out were managerial positions. Here I am. I had just turned 23. It was 2 months after I had just turned 23. Or less than 2 months, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, less than 2 months. Because the interview day was actually the actual 2 month mark of turning 23. And I look at it and I'm like, I really want to work at this production firm.
So how you spent your birthday, was at an interview?
No, that was 2 months after the birthday. So I look at the qualifications of the jobs and I'm saying, I have every qualification they need. And I only want to be at this production house. The only thing I don't have is the years of experience, because the position I wanted needed 7 years of experience. The second closest needed 5 years of experience. I didn't have that. At best, I had 2 years of experience in about 2 months. But you know what? Amongst all the other jobs I was applying for, I also said, I'll also apply for this. I mean, what's the worst they can do? Just send me a rejection email. We've seen plenty of those. Okay, cool. And so, fast forward to
rejection. Well,
I mean, now I do. Probably didn't take the tick then. When I can say that now. That was not the thought at the moment. Yeah, that was the way I need to get this.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I knew they're gonna knock me off from the qualifications part. So I wasn't even that serious about it. So 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, I get the call, and we were approaching the festive season, because my interview was on December 23rd. And we're approaching the festive season. So when I got a call, first I thought it was a prank, because it came very late in the evening. It was around 4 p.m. And they're telling me, that was like Tuesday, and they need me on a Thursday, on a Friday, actually. And I was like, I'm going to show up. But I didn't know what to present. Again, what I say about keep yourself learning, keep yourself in the networks, learn what to do.
Yeah.
I did not know what to present. I did not know you go with a portfolio. I did not know you carry work. My whole thing was, I don't know what to do. So, would you believe I packaged everything I had done into a DVD? And that's the only thing I went with for the interview. I did not even carry a CV because it didn't click. You need to. I did not carry my documents because it didn't click. You needed to. I was just like, yeah, you already saw that on my CV. You already saw that in my document. I don't think you're going to need that. So let me carry what you didn't see. Get to the reception area. And
where's your CV?
When I tell you 2-3 minutes in, I almost walked away.
Yeah.
Because I got there and all the other candidates have binders. They had binders. That's first. Secondly, they were all older than
this was a creative job.
Yes, it was a creative job because
but like manager,
you are gonna get. But my end game was not manager. My end game was this is my foot into the production house where I get to play around with the equipment. I get around to do what I need to do and get my claws in. So even I remember when I got into the interview, I mean, I told them, hey, first of all, I asked them, first of all, I'm surprised. When everyone had the television to this, I'm like, and I'm surprised you guys picked me because I know I don't have the five. I'm snitching on myself. I don't have the 5 years experience. But I have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
And I might not be interviewing for this position. You might even think you want to give me another position, even lower.
Yeah. Wow.
And we had a lot of conversations. And I think, must have done something right because I got a call back like 3-4 days later because it was on the 27th.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a conversation. What I was interviewing for at that time was general manager. I didn't quite get that, but they gave me operations, but they also allowed me leeway to do a lot of creative things. And I was going to start the following year in January. And so got into that. So that's why I sort of like stumbled into management.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when you get there, people now expect you to deliver. I am sorry, we know you are saying you don't have that much experience, but you're going to have to learn on the job. You're going to have to strap up your boots and understand what is required of you.
Yeah.
And that was just the thing. And so when you asked about the difficulty, it was difficult because here you come, you've been given an operational managerial position. People don't respect you for who you are, people for your title. People respect you for what they can see. And here you have everyone in your team telling you, you've never done that? It's a project. You've never done that? Oh, it's been doing that for like 6-5 years. So there's already a sort of like resentment from these people. And they're thinking, why is this person not understanding that we know more than him? And at first that was a bit intimidating, and it took me talking to a few of my friends, a few of the people I looked up to as mentors, for them to tell me, listen, boohoo, you can cry about it, nobody owes you respect, you're gonna have to earn it. And so how do you earn that respect? You need to first of all thrive and show in the areas that you thrive best. So one of the areas I thrived best was creating structure and communication. I was like, that's what I'm gonna start with in this department as I try and learn and upskill, get my technical skill at a higher level. Of course there was conflict, there was in and outs, there were points where even some of the team members did a boycott and left. But in the end of it all, I ended up building and retaining a team that now was in line with what we needed to achieve and what needed to be done. And I think that was my first tough lesson in the world in management. People can even walk out and just be like, deuces, we're out. You just do your thing, we're out. So it's not easy. There are those who have it easy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I was with one of those people. And even so, the level of difficulties are different from several people. But you just have to be cognizant of, is this in line with what I'm trying to do? Or look around the situation, what can I do to turn it over?
A conversation that I've had with people, back and forth quite a bit, and you've been in some of these conversations, is around the fact that as a manager of creatives, you'd need to have an element of, creative knowledge to be able to manage them well. From your time so far managing creatives, would you say it's been easier for you to manage them or more efficient for you to manage creatives because you've been in their space before? Or is it something that you think, any corporate communications or advertising or marketing person would be in place to handle well?
I think on that matter, we agree. And I know a lot of people fight me back on this. But for you to...
Would you like to send shout-outs to the people that will fight you back? You know, some of them?
Find me on Afrimilenio. But I'm an ardent believer that for you to be an effective creative manager, or in any field rather, you must have worked in that field before in other capacities. Because it gives you an understanding of what the process is like.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, if someone came here and they require you to edit them for them a commercial, and they've never edited a day of their life or never been around editors or don't understand the editing process, they might be even they might even utter words like, I know you shot that thing for 2 hours, but I need a 20-minute packaged finished product in 15 minutes. Okay, thank you, cool, let's do. Or might even throw around ignorant statements like, it's a 5-second voiceover, you can give me that in a minute, cool. It doesn't work like that. They are leaving out, if it's a voiceover, they're leaving out the sound engineer, the music producer, everything that needs to go into packaging that. But in as much as a creative, you become the great manager, then you don't do it just by being a creative.
Yeah.
It's also by creating structures and systems. Because in being a creative, it only helps you understand the creatives and understand the process. So for lack of a better word, that means no one is going to bullshit you. No one is going to be trying to, one up
because you know
on something. Because you know, you're telling me this can't be done. I know it can be done. I've probably done it.
Yes,
it's done.
Yeah.
Or you're telling me this can be done within this time period. I know it can be done. So the only thing it helps you to do is now create structures that weave around each creative department.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an animator?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, do you have a graphic illustrator? Do you have a voiceover artist? Do you have a video editor? Do you have a camera person? Do you have a musician? Do you have what you call an influencer? Do you have all that? In understanding what they do, then you're able to create structures that streamline efficiency for them, and also does not create a disconnect between them and everyone else, because there's this notion that creatives are difficult to work with.
Yeah.
Are they difficult to work with, or you do not just understand how they work, or don't have structures and systems in places that streamline that kind of efficiency? So one of the things, and I wish I knew this earlier, because I learned this after I think of one project had gone terribly wrong in my earlier career, and I was in charge of it.
Yeah.
And it's out of that that I remember the MD, and I like that I've been given opportunities and grace, and so I give opportunities and grace along the way. You know, I think the MD at the time sat me down and told me, like, yo, listen, I know this failed, but boohoo, failure will happen once in a while.
Yeah.
But you need to make sure this doesn't happen, because where you failed in this is there wasn't a definitive structure, and this is how you would have done it better. And so since then, that built an approach of how do I move around when I'm thinking about projects? How do I move around when I'm bringing creatives from different segments, backgrounds, and areas to be able to achieve what's required? And so that in essence is a big lesson if you're going to manage creatives. Yeah.
Your firm, Ed Brainy Communications, right?
Yes.
Does quite a bit of influencer management. Yes. Or
started out doing that. Now we deal a lot with corporates and their digital brand translation.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you've done
Yes.
influencer management.
Yes.
Of sorts. One thing with the influencer space of Uganda, at least, you'll correct me if it's different with Kenya, is that there's a lot of influencers that have come into the space, you know, based off one lucky TikTok video that went viral, or Instagram, you know, one silly tweet that they tweeted and like it blew up, and from there suddenly they became influential on social media, so to speak.
What are the influencers? Some people are influencers and not
influential.
So yeah.
Good. That's exactly where I want us to head.
Yeah.
Do you have influencers of that nature here? Like, is it a majority here, or is it like a small space?
We do. Unfortunately, I think that's in every market. We do.
Yeah.
And the problem with this is that they thrive for a very short period and it dies out because you're trying to overwork the same trope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it comes to virality, it's not an exact science of what becomes viral, what doesn't become viral.
Yeah.
But when something becomes viral, it's an opportunity for you to understand, how did it connect with your audience? It doesn't mean beat down that concept to the end.
This guy is beat the thing.
Like, maybe my one viral video
milk the was whole cow. Me
doing one single dance move, and I decided I am going to milk this for 3 years. If it doesn't have a transitional phase where you walk your audience through different segments of, hey, this is who I was, but I'm trying to do this. So test different things with your audiences. Of course, in the beginning, it's rightfully so. Because if we knew for this in the beginning, rightfully so, you might want to do it, but don't overdo it. Like, you might want to do it for like a week or two. But quickly, when you have people's attention, start showing them other things about you that walk the journey with them. So that you're not trying to introduce these things later when your trope is dead. And they're like, oh, yeah, your 15 seconds of fame are done. Please just let us be. Okay, bye. Also think about how does it infuse into a brand you now need to build?
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't build into something, then, or does it connect to something that you are already building that you can now expand?
Your input there was given quite an interesting soundtrack by Choppers Flying Over Nairobi. I don't know if that's cue for us to like pack up and run, or for the listeners, today is Thursday and it's one of those days that I think there's like
In this process and duration, we're having what's called peaceful protests.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do we pack up and leave? Do we?
We're safe. We're good.
But let's stick around. Let's stick around. I'm sure we're in a good place. So now my question is: as Ed Brainy Communications, if this is something you've done, how do you help influencers that rose in that manner to sort of professionalize what they want to do as influencers? You know, learn how to tap into audiences, learn community engagement, learn how to commercialize what they're doing. you know, learn how to contractualize what they're doing even before they, you know, learn how to commercialize and things of the sort. How does that go?
We start by answering the why with them, and you put them to work, because the why is fine. This is how you became famous, and this is how people got to know about you. But what was the reason, or why did you start this?
Mm-hmm.
For this particular thing that made you go viral, what was the thought process in creating it?
Yeah.
So first you get to understand, was it by fluke or is it something they were working to? If it was by fluke, now it's dangerous, because you have to think, okay, well, how do we pivot this and build something around it? So there are some who give you and you realize, okay, this one was already on a path, so let's buff this up, grow it. The one thing you start with is working on themselves, because this, the virality and the fame can get into their head where they are no longer approachable, or they are quoting ridiculous amounts right off the bat. They don't understand, or they are duped into contracts because they don't understand anything about the legal process. So that's where we used to come in, or we come in, because right now we don't onboard any new clients. We only work with whoever it is that we still have.
Yeah.
Because our business pivoted into a different direction, growth as well. So it's an issue of we are here. So how are we going to drive this? Let's first create your brand, because that's what we sell, not only to the corporates, but to your audience. What is the brand? Understand your brand. What does that mean? If your brand, for instance, today came off as Anthony Bad Boy, I mean, that may not be you, but that's your brand. And if that's the brand your audience online...
Something I see myself doing, Anthony Bad Boy.
Yeah. And if that's, the brand the online people resonated with, it becomes... I mean, that's what we now create and build around. And I mean, earlier on, we were having a conversation with you, I think off record, about how sometimes it's difficult for people to manage your own social media pages, especially if you have fluid personalities, because I could be a different personality on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or Snapchat or TikTok, but I'm the same person. It's just that maybe my Instagram audience relates more to this side of me than my Twitter audience does. So that's the same thing that happens with influencers as well. On different platforms, people are there for you for different reasons. And the first thing is to identify what's that reason so that you capitalize on it. Capitalizing it does not mean do the same kind of content. It means you're building content around that understanding. Then secondly, you build a profile that is able to be shared out to the world, to people, to corporates, to prospective partners. And then sell your unique selling point. What's my unique selling point in all this? Because again, they have this, I mean, you're not the only influencer out there. There's several doing the same thing you're doing, and there will be others who are coming after you. So what it is that makes it unique about you? So that's why you put in the elements of personality, the elements of these essential skills of how well they communicate, how well they relate, how well they network. And then after packaging all that, you price it. Because I mean, that's the end goal. Because as a person or a firm managing, you're only getting a percentage of what your talent is able to get. So if you're able to package and grow your talent, continuous training and learning to a point where they make more, then you make more.
Beautiful, beautiful. I think that's very, very insightful advice. I'll probably, you know, refer to it for my own work. Bad
Boy.
You can
if he starts using, send me if a quotation. If he starts using Anto Bad Boy, I want my share. My
I'm seriously thinking of trademarking Anthony Bad Boy. First, I need to check and be sure that nobody else has used it in the past.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have that conversation after I trademark it. So you have two thriving brands. There's you know.
Ed Brainy
is you. Very thriving brand. Then you successfully started off a digital marketing firm from that, you know, Ed Brainy Communications. And the two have managed to thrive. Now, my experience with a lot of creatives, again, back home in Uganda, it's weird that I have no experience at all with creatives in the Kenyan space, but yeah.
You need to spend more time in Kenya.
Kenya. We shall see. Anyway, so my lesson from, you know, working with a lot of creatives and also engaging their content online is that usually when they try to build a personal brand and they try to start a brand for their business or whatever it is that they're trying to commercialize and do, usually one succeeds at the expense of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's the one that they started off with. You know, if you started off an Instagram account for business, gathered a lot of following there, by the time you realize that, you know what? I have aspects of my life that I would like to share with Instagram that are not necessarily my photography, and start a personal account for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to move, you know, audiences that side.
Yeah.
And also the reverse is true. Like if you start sharing your creative work on your personal profile,
yeah, yeah,
when you start a profile for your business, it's going to be hard to cue the audience,
separate,
the other side.
Yeah. To separate and cue the audience.
So do you have any tips around that, like how to balance the two? And also, like, how do you choose, you know, like content that you create, you know, how do you choose what belongs where when you're just starting out,
you
having
never,
duo
I brands? Think you never get a balance or you never attain a balance.
Yeah.
But the thing is awareness. In the sense of, we go around with this warped mentality of, if I have 1 million followers on TikTok,
yeah,
I should also have 1 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
But that's already a problem in thinking, because you're not always going to cater to the same audiences.
Mm-hmm.
The audiences that know me as the fun-loving, you know, party good look, you know, party good times ambassador.
Yeah, good looking. Yeah. The party good looking.
Is not the same audience that perhaps, okay, there could be, there are places where they intersect.
Yeah.
But it's not the same audience that I cater to when we find each other on the business side or mm-hmm. professional side. It's not the same audience that caters, that we probably know each other when I am out there doing creative things.
Yeah.
It's not the same audience that knows me as a student. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we happen to be, to be students as well back in school. But that realization first is an important thing. Secondly, is to decide, in this realization, how do I delineate these spaces? How do you meet me somewhere and call me, hey, Brainy? And I'm like, oh, not Brainy now.
No,
Edwin.
Yeah. You don't know me like that.
Edwin. It's Edwin Korea. it's Nigel. It's Edwin. How do you meet me like, hey, Nigel? And I'm like, no. Brainy is here.
Yeah.
It's you have to walk people through that journey. It's not easy, but you walk them through how you put out stuff. Like, I'll think this. There are things I'll do. Like, for instance, I'll do this. And in the same thing that we've done in today's podcast, I may decide to do the quirky beats and the reel to put to TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
May decide to put the more serious beats maybe on my LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Then I may decide for Instagram, because they know me as a very fun-loving person, to put whatever it is were the laughable moments or the happy moments. So same thing, translated differently to different audiences so that they're able to connect with you at that level. So they will always overlap at some point. There are people who cannot see you as anything else other than what they saw you as the first time, or other than what they perceive to know about you from the online space. I say perceive very strongly, because the online space gives us...
Perception is a strong thing.
The online space gives us fluid, what I call fluid personalities. You can be anyone, anything, anytime. You are the one who decides, what do I want to build and put out there? So for you to separate that, it's when I go into spaces where I'm doing business, and when I was creating my business, I wasn't going in as, hey, I'm Ed Brainy, the TikToker, the Instagrammer, the what? I'd go in with, hey, I'm Edwin Kuria, the journalist who has this much communication experience, who also has an advertising background, and who is also maybe perhaps pursuing their master's in this and doing this. I'm leading with that. There are spaces where I go and I'm like, hey, I have an audience reach of this and I connect with this. So it's how you go in those conversations. When I'm starting my business, when I'm pitching for clients, they are not seeing me and thinking, oh my god, he might not even be doing my work and he's doing a TikTok dance.
I mean, the dance can be your work.
I mean, the dance can be the work, but they're very confident in, he has the capability of what it takes to achieve this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just about delineating those.
Brilliant. Yeah. Before I let you go, you know, of course you have to share your parting words with us. Now is your time to get into your Jay Shetty, Busi Tembepayo, what's that guy's name? Tony Robbins? Robbins,
no,
kind
I don't
of
know.
Not.
I mean, I have my own reservations with motivational speakers. Anyway, that's the whole.
Now's the time to, you know, get into that mind space. But before you get into that, tell me, looking back on your creative journey, if there was that one or two things you could have done differently, what's that?
I would have been less harsh on myself and not compared myself to everyone else who was around me.
Say that louder for the people that didn't hear at the back.
I would have been very less harsh on myself
and
not compared myself as much as I did with the people around me.
Yeah.
And I'll explain it. Less harsh in the sense of, I don't know if it's the industry or if it's this perception of social media that has put us in a position where we feel like we all need to be doing the same thing or winning or at the same pace or doing all that. And so when you encounter the smallest challenge or that, you feel like, oh my God, the world is unfair to me.
Yeah.
Why me? Am I the problem? Am I the one who put myself in this? Am I who did this? And that closes you off from seeing a lot of opportunities. That closes you off from actually putting the work, because sometimes you even give up and like, okay, maybe I don't know so-and-so because I don't have those connections. Maybe that's why they are thriving. You're not asking yourself, what else do they do beyond the connections, or how do they even build these connections? Then I think, other than being harsh myself, I just stop comparing myself with everyone else, because we have this thing of like, yo, we probably have the same qualifications, probably work in the same spaces. Why are we not thriving at the same rate? Or why are we not getting to where it is? But you don't know what these people are doing. You do, because everyone is running their own race. So I would have done less of that and more of putting my own small milestones, which is what I do now. My wins are not predicated on what does everyone else think? Is everyone else winning at the same rate? Mm-hmm. They are predicated on what are my goals and objectives. Like, mm-hmm. if I list down, I'm like, oh, this month, I want probably bag 2 clients. If I do that, for me, that's a win. And clients yeah. of this kind of nature, this yeah. is, mm, that's yeah. a win. If I don't, then there's a lot more work that needs to be done. Or I need to reevaluate whatever that strategy was.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went on with the mentality of, oh, maybe my win this quarter, not even a month, maybe this quarter my win was like, oh, I need to travel to another country this quarter. If I do that, good, attained it. But if I compare myself to that person who travels to different countries in 1 week, I'm probably going to be like very depressed and thinking, oh my goodness. So self-awareness is very key.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we waste a lot of time in our early years not getting there. But I wish we could be more lenient on ourselves to understand yeah. who we are.
Mm.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Parting shots, Mr. Jay Shetty.
I'll parting shot. I don't know. I just find what feeds you in terms of energy. Find what gives you the energy to do what you do. Because again, it's a lot of work when you try to fit into spaces that don't fulfill you.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I always say sometimes you might find yourself in spaces mm-hmm. that don't fulfill you because perhaps you need to make a name for yourself or you need to be in the industry. But don't stagnate and sit there. Don't ever lose sight of what it is that you wanted to go for or wanted to do, because then you always have to work a roadmap of how am I getting there. And if it takes long, it's fine. If it takes a short time, it's fine. Don't We are all running different races and we'll get there at different times. Yeah.
If it takes long, it's fine. If it takes short, it's fine.
And if it doesn't happen either, I mean, we can, races. And even if it doesn't happen, you can think, take joy in the wins and the beautiful moments that happen every day.
Yeah. Do you also take record of the losses, or is that?
Oh, I absolutely do. You cannot ignore them. Take record, but don't dwell there. Take record.
Take losses as lessons.
Take record, analyze the situation, see what you could have changed or yeah. can be changed, so you don't fall into that trap yeah. again. But don't fixate on them and be like, oh my goodness, this, or don't make a personality out of it. You know, there are people who feel in one or two things like, okay, that's it, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But you probably didn't analyze or realize, oh, I didn't put my all. Mm-hmm. I didn't even take the time to learn what it
Beautiful.
Required.
Beautiful. Yeah. Mm. What does the future look like for Ed Brainy as we head out?
Interesting. I'm working my way to, and perhaps that's why I'm doing my master's in digital journalism. I'm working my way into the advocacy space.
Okay.
Because the beauty of communication and what I have seen from the creative space is that they can match. Creativity helps translate information faster than anything else.
Yeah.
I'm more likely to have my campaign spread faster with a song
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or with a film. Or with a feature documentary than it would be with all those let's have conferences, let's have workshops
yeah, and
all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm looking into how I can put in that experience, those skills yeah. and funnel them into advocacy space so that we have transformational change and an impact in the world.
There's a name for that, you know, it's called artivism. Like using art for advocacy yes. and activism, or is it different from what you're trying to?
I mean, it's that, but you're probably branding it different, because then also artism, anything that has an artism in it, is whether it's activism or artism, it's looked at, it has a connotation of it's going to be very
negative.
And
yeah, there's going to be bombs in this
it's
place.
There's going to be bombs in this place.
Hey, Nigel, me and you could talk like all day until the cows come back home, as Ugandans like to say. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. Thank you for making the time, you know, amidst all your 25 meetings of the day.
My 30 meetings of the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank Probably you so much for
the
having
phone
me.
Buzz here and there. That was, you know, Nigel rejecting meetings so he could, you know, speak some sense into us.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. My name is Anthony Michael Mwami. Nigel said a lot of creative stuff, smart things. If you think anything stood out for you that you might want to give some feedback on, please don't hesitate to share with us feedback. The number to send that to is 0709-970-970, and that's at +256. You know, you
can find me everywhere.
Yeah,
as Ed Brainy, EWD Brainy.
Uh-huh. If everywhere. You have anything you'd like to address to him directly, don't take it outside. Just find him on social media at Ed Brainy, EWD, right?
Yes, EWD Brainy. Brainy. every super platform.
Super. We'll be happy to hear your feedback, and until next time, thank you and cheers.